This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz. Along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss amongst themselves in every lounge in America, across the country, on all topics in healthcare imaginable. And we let you in on those private discussions so that you'll be armed with the information that you'll need to fight for your healthcare. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization. It was founded by doctors who were deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in, and we offer solutions that are very different than those that have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who think that they know better than you do about the kind of health care that you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. Our foundation is going around the country fighting for the health care freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to their website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow these people to carry on the fight on your behalf. You might not think you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you, you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be someday, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you. And that's a perfect lead-in to our topic today, which is the end of private practice medicine. Excuse me, I'm fighting a cold today, so I'm going to be clearing my throat a bit, and I apologize for that. We are going to talk about a topic that has been something that I personally have been writing about for some time. You know, people who are married often will say, if you're a husband, it's better to be happy than right. And unfortunately, in this case, I'm right and very unhappy, because we've been predicting that that private practice medicine would be disappearing, and it's happening much more rapidly than we ever anticipated. I wrote about this several times, dating back to 2010, and in fact, I pulled a couple of my op-eds in 2012 on townhall.com that speak directly to this. One column I wrote was The War Against Doctors. Another one was that Obamacare may be around, but will your doctor? And people who were not involved in healthcare directly thought that this was the Chicken Little saying that the sky was falling, and how could this ever really happen? But this is something that those of us who saw the tea leaves predicted was going to happen. And in fact, this past Monday in the Wall Street Journal, Dr. Scott Gottlieb of American Enterprise Institute and a frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal wrote an opinion piece entitled Obamacare's Threat to Private Practice. And that's what we're going to touch on today and talk about. My guest today is Dr. Ori Hample, who is a private practice urologist in Houston, Texas. He is one of the officers of the Docs for Patient Care Texas chapter. He is a frequent radio guest in the Houston area, op-ed writer, and someone who has been very involved in the fight against Obamacare, and someone who is on the forefront of fighting for healthcare freedom for his patients and for all Americans. So I'd like to welcome you, Ori, into the Doctor's Lounge today.
Good morning, Hal.
You know, Ori, I hope that you had a chance to read Scott's very well-written opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, he starts out by discussing the fact that on the road that we're on right now, private practice of healthcare, of medical practice, doctors who have their own independent medical practices, in jeopardy, and on the path that we're on, it's going to disappear in the not too distant future. What? Tell me your take on this.
Well, the trend away from the private practice of medicine and more of the employment of medicine, as far as physicians are concerned, really dates back to the 1980s. That's when this path began. And if you can think 30, 40 years ago, when I was a kid, almost all doctors were in their own business. They were self-employed or part of a group that was small enough that they really had a vested interest. And we've seen over the years, and this is just from the whole regulatory apparatus that goes back to the, you know, to the 60s with Medicare and to the 80s with the third-party payer system, that we see that that physicians have progressively become more and more employed and less in a decision-making position. And what we've seen with all these regulations, there's from Medicare to Medicaid, the state regulations to insurance regulations to laws like EMTALA and HIPAA and all these other acronym laws, that physicians have been pushed away from being in their own business and more into being an employee because there's so much regulation in medicine. But what we've really seen is that this trend, which was very consistent up until 2010, went into overdrive with Obamacare. So with the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act being passed, you saw this trend accelerated far more than any of us anticipated. All of us knew that physicians were going to be pushed into employment type of situations. But I don't think I did, and I don't think most of us did, anticipate how fast it would actually have occurred.
Okay, so let me just throw out a startling statistic. Before Obamacare was implemented, 65% of doctors were in private practice. 35% worked for hospitals or other entities that employed them, and that would include doctors in universities. It would include some of the large medical centers. Obamacare was implemented, and in 2012, 49% of doctors were in private practice. Today, 2014, only 35% of the doctors in America are in private practice. Ori, tell me why it's a problem for doctors not to be in private practice. Let me say this a different way. What is the issue? Why is it so bad that private practice is disappearing?
Well, this is really the problem with medicine. And you know what? The people that are for government-run healthcare or single-payer system or those types of scenarios would say, well, what's wrong with doctors being employees? What's wrong? Why do doctors have to be in their own business? Why do doctors have to be in their own practice? And this basically gets to the whole crux of the issue. And the real important thing here is if we think back when we were kids and there were shows such as Marcus Welby and other medical shows, the physicians in that point in time were, we assume, a reflection of what doctors were supposed to be like in society or what they were in society. And those doctors, to them, medicine was a vocation. It was a calling. Those physicians didn't leave their patients or thinking about their patients in when they left the office. Being a doctor was part of their whole being. It involved their whole life. And they were totally wholeheartedly dedicated to their patients. They knew their patients intimately as far as who, when they were sick, when they were well, what their wives were doing, what their husbands were doing, what their kids were doing. They were involved in their patients' lives, and to them, medicine was a vocation, was a calling. And then, as time progressed, medicine became more of a career. Doctors were dedicated to their career, but they started to leave the medicine at the office. So when they left the office, they turned, they turn off their phones or their pagers, they were no longer accessible to their patients. And we see that, we've seen that during my 16 and a half years in practice, is that when I went into practice, there were plenty of doctors who used to go to the hospital. When their patients got sick, they saw them in the hospital, they took care of them. The patients they knew in the office, they took care of in the hospital. Well, what's happened in the last 16 and a half years is that very rarely will the family doctor, the family internist, actually take care of the patient, take care of you when you were in the hospital and you were ill. So because it's economically unfeasible. That's the first part. And the second part is that medicine is no longer becoming a vocation. It was becoming a career. So when you were sick, you went to the hospital, the doctor said, you know what, I'll let the hospitalist take it, some employee physician who was employed by the hospital, let's take care of the patient, not incompetently. You know, the hospitalists are very good doctors as a general rule. And then whenever the patient's healthy again, I'll take care of him. So that connection and the continuity of care was lost. And then what we see now is that it went from a vocation to a career, but now medicine is just a job. So you'll see a physician who works for one group, and you know, a few months later, he might work for another group if the deal is better or the call schedule is better or whatever. And so the physician is now just an employee. So he doesn't have that connection to the patient. He doesn't know his patients anymore. And that is really the problem. It's a problem that the dedication of the physician to the patient has changed because the physician is no longer invested in his business. And we see this even in any small business, such as a restaurant or a hardware store. If you walk into a hardware store that's a family-owned business, they're going to know where every nut and bolt is. They're going to know exactly how to help you. And you might not get that same type of service in a large hardware store, such as a Lowe's or Home Depot, because the people employed there are their employees. They don't have a vested interest in that business.
Okay, so let me reorganize that. So, you know, the problem that disappearance of private practice represents for patients is the fact that when doctors work for institutions, when they no longer own their own business, there is a loss of connection, which you've said, but more importantly, when you work for a larger entity, you no longer are your own boss. You are answering to somebody else. And the current organization of healthcare, that somebody else turns out to be a middle manager who's not concerned about healthcare. They're concerned about managing the bottom line. They're concerned about things that are different than what our patients are concerned about, which is keeping them healthy, which is to have the personal touch, to do a test when they want a test, or to hold their hand. Now doctors are being forced to put patients through their clinic or their office in a assembly line fashion. They don't get to spend time with them. The doctors are being penalized if they spend too much time with their patients. And it's all about bottom line. And so the fact that doctors are working for someone else instead of for themselves hurts patients, and this is all driven by dollars. And Ori, we're going to need to take a hard break right now, and we're going to get a little bit deeper into why Obamacare is killing private practice in America. This is the Doctor's Lounge, and this is Dr. Hal Schurz.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schurz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded.
people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. My guest is Ori Hample, private practice urologist in Houston, Texas. We're talking about Obamacare and how it threatens private practice medicine. Scott Gottlieb wrote a great column in the Wall Street Journal, which pretty much nails what this problem is. And Ori, the problem really boils down to money. It's about reimbursement and the third-party payer system. Primarily, the government led third-party payment system is driving this trend away from private practice and into consolidated medical groups, which are favored under the Affordable Care Act. And recently, Congress just adopted new Medicare payment reforms. This is from both houses of Congress, and it favors the consolidation of doctors into what is termed accountable care organizations so that they can tie the reimbursement to a central hospital where they can manage costs better. And this is a huge problem, isn't it?
This is a gigantic problem. But the reality here is that money is at the center of all these trends, and it's money. But it's more than just money, it's also an issue of control. Because there's money in the system, but you've got to establish the control over behavior and control over activity, because that allows you to control the money even better.
Well,
the government has been control over the money for a long time in the Medicare system, and Medicaid system, and also the insurance companies have been in control of the money ever since the early 80s when the third-party payer system came along. However, Obamacare adds that extra emphasis and extra impetus to control, and that puts everything into overdrive.
Okay, so let's kind of get granular. So the people on the left want to see a single-payer healthcare system, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And there are, we have a third-party payment system, so patients aren't paying the bills directly. This is being funneled through either government or insurance companies, okay? Right? And so you've got a $2.9 trillion annual economy, of which physicians only get about 8% of that total pie. That means 92% go to other entities to split up that $2.9 trillion annually. And so there's a lot of money at stake and a lot of money being thrown around by insurance companies, by hospitals. So you've got moneyed interests. You've got people in power in Washington who have a desire to get to a single payer. And this is a bad, toxic mix for patients and for the medical profession. Correct?
Correct. The reality is that one of the reasons, the main mission statement of Docs for Patient Care, the organization that you started, over 5 years ago, was to protect the physician-patient relationship. And what we see is that the physician-patient relationship in most scenarios doesn't exist at all. It exists only superficially, and it exists as the same it's the same level of relationship you would have when you walk into Walmart to that clerk. That clerk is providing a service. You pay for that service or product, and then you leave. I mean, that clerk doesn't know you from Adam. And the same is happening now in medicine, is that the physician doesn't know his patients anymore. And you, as a patient, you don't know your physician anymore. And so it used to be that healthcare was a partnership. You partnered with your doctor in staying well, staying healthy, living longer. There was a vested interest in maintaining that relationship, the doctor, because it was his calling, and it was his career, and it was the reputation of his business, and the patient, because they want to live healthier and live longer and be pain-free and be happy. And now that relationship is essentially disappearing, and it's almost completely disappeared.
Okay.
And it's all because of the money and the control over the money.
So we'll go back to money. So the Accountable Care Organization, or the consolidation of medicine, it's really a canard, because the costs are going up as a result of consolidation. They're actually not going down. What's happening is that the consolidation of medical practices in communities into these mega hospitals or healthcare delivery systems is actually driving up costs, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's driving up costs because the you have to look at where the costs are incurred. In the old way of doing things, when the physician was in their own practice, the cost was at the level of the physician and the patient. So you went to see the doctor, he provided a service, you paid him for that service. There weren't all these other entities involved in moving money through the system. Now with the Accountable Care Organization and that structure, the money comes directly in a prepaid fashion to the larger entity. And they're, of course, motivated to get more and more and more of this money. And so the real big players in the system, not the 8% that's controlled by doctors, but the real money in the system is working toward getting more money
right
from the system.
Right.
And these are huge, very powerful entities. You have to look at Obamacare. Who supported Obamacare? The American Hospital Association. Big hospitals are very powerful. The big pharmaceutical industry, and of course, the big insurance industry.
Don't forget about the IT industry.
And of course, the IT industry. They have exploded. Healthcare IT is an exploding field because it also centers around that whole control. Because when you've got everything computerized and every patient becomes a widget or a data point, then you need computers to control those data points and move them around to wherever you want them.
Well, one of the things that deserves mention is the fact that there's a perverse reimbursement scheme that has been set up by Medicare so that identical services that are delivered in a private practice office, for example, versus a hospital, are reimbursed at a higher rate in the hospital than they are in the private practice setting. So this incentivizes hospitals to purchase physician practices so that they can insource those services and get paid at a higher rate. So they can pay doctors what seemingly would be a lot of money up front for a buyout, employ those doctors, and then reap the benefits in the way of higher reimbursement for the services that those doctors produce.
Right, and when you use the word reimbursement, you need to really define what that means. That means this is how much money moves from whoever's holding the money to whoever is getting the money to provide a service or a product. So what happens is when suppose you have a private practice gastroenterologist that might do a colonoscopy with sedation in his clinic with a little surgery center that he has as part of his clinic. So the cost of that colonoscopy might be X. When that physician becomes employed by a hospital, And that procedure now moves from the doctor's office, where the doctor would make profit, God forbid, to the hospital, where the doctor's an employee and the doctor's not making profit. The cost of that identical procedure is 10x. It goes up tenfold. So whoever is paying for that service, be it the government, the insurance company, and ultimately all of us, we're all paying 10 times for the same service. What got eliminated is that private practice physician, having their own in-office facility, no longer is making more of a profit.
So they're squeezing the
but
private practice.
You shifted it to the hospital,
right,
where the entity providing that service, and the physician is just a cog in the wheel in that point as an employee, that costs the system tenfold.
Now, well, what's happening is that the government is squeezing out private practice intentionally. So Medicare is slashing what they're paying private practice doctors, making it impossible for them to continue to give those services or to provide those services to patients. So either two things happen. They stop providing those services, or they sell their practices to hospitals, and they go to work for hospitals where Medicare is paying a multiple for that same service. And so what's happening is that little by little, doctors are disappearing, and the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is really driving this to happen because of the underlying goal of the architects of this, which is to get to a single payer. Another aspect of this is IT, which we touched on for a few seconds ago. The Affordable Care Act, is creating a mechanism by which if you don't meet certain benchmarks, meaningful use, and my co-host Dr. Karuchik talks about this all the time, but if you don't meet meaningful use, you're going to get reimbursed less than if you do meet meaningful use. And that means that you have to have an infrastructure, an IT infrastructure, which many single practice physicians simply can't afford to set up. And so they're forced by Obamacare, because of the way reimbursement is set up, to sell their practices to hospitals.
Correct. And you know, I like to call those benchmarks that the government looks at and private payers are looking at as meaningless use, because the reality is that many of these data that we collect, such as, you know, preferred language, such as, you know, the ethnicity, such all kinds of data that is part of this, what is meaningful use or the meaningless use that we collect as part of electronic medical records, and the hospitals collect it, and the urgent care centers collect it. Everybody's collecting this data. And really, what it all involves is it all involves physicians have become data collectors and data entry specialists. It just happens to be medical data and related data entry specialists. And the problem is that to collect all these data, and more importantly, to be able to organize it and report it to whom? The government and the insurance companies, is the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure is so onerous that an individual physician or a small physician group cannot afford to be able to collect that data.
Well,
so therefore, physicians say, well, the minute that I have to go to EMR, I'm retiring, or I quit and I'm becoming an employee,
right,
because the IT infrastructure drives the physician out of being in,
right,
practice.
Ori, we're coming to a hard break, but this is, again, all part of Obamacare's threat to private practice. This is Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded.
people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Ori Hampel. Ori, you know, we've now established how Obamacare is really hurting private practice medicine, why it's bad for Americans, because they lose choice and costs go up. And not only that, but they lose quality when private practice disappears. So the reason why we're here at this juncture isn't just Obamacare, but Obamacare has certainly accelerated things. And so what I think we need to see happen is for there to be a leveling of the playing field, because right now it is severely tilted towards hospitals, toward insurance companies, and toward government regulation. And in order for there to be some improvement in the healthcare environment for our patients, private practice needs to have equal footing. There needs to be a leveling of the playing field. And so I want to focus on that in this segment. The problems that occur right now have to do with the fact that doctors, you mentioned this earlier, are so overregulated that they can't compete on an equal playing field with the hospitals, with these accountable care organizations, because many of the rules that apply to doctors don't apply to the ACOs or to the hospitals, right?
Right. It's actually worse than that. It's not that doctors can't compete in the same playing field. Doctors can't even get to the field now. They're locked out of the stadium. The reality is that you have to have certain tools to practice medicine in the Obamacare era, such as, you know, huge computer infrastructure and such as the ability to provide a care or service in an environment where the payment for that service has gone down so dramatically. And so, you know, physicians, it's not about, you know, how much money is the doctor making. It's a question of, can the doctor afford to pay his staff, to pay his rent, to pay his malpractice insurance, and have any money to take home? So this is all this environment basically eliminates the physician from the private practice setting, because he can't even get the equipment to participate in the game, let alone play it.
Okay, so let's go ahead given that fact that many doctors are in single practice or in two-person practices are at an incredible disadvantage. Let's put that aside. Let's talk about some of the impediments that doctors face in addition to that, that puts them at a severe disadvantage to the accountable care organizations or to the hospitals. Let's talk about one. Let me give you a prompt, for example. Doctors can't get together and talk about business or about prices.
Right. Doctors are specifically prohibited from participating in free enterprise. Doctors are specifically, by federal law, prohibited from being in a union, from unionizing, from organizing. So physicians can't compare prices or business practices or anything like that where any other profession can. So physicians are specifically prohibited in the law from being able to organize themselves to be able to compete.
So in the Accountable Care Organization scenario, hospitals can purchase physician practices and amass large numbers of doctors and put them together because they have a single tax ID number, for example. That's how they get around it. Medical practices that are separate and separate businesses can't sit in a room and talk about those kinds of things because that would be called antitrust and they would get thrown in jail.
Right, and it's not just right. But even if you talk about, well, what if the employed physicians got together? Well, and try to do something to make sure that, you know, the physician-patient relationship is preserved or to be advocates for their patients. Well, they're prohibited.
Well,
actually, in
fairness, hospital doctors who work for individual hospitals can do that. They can't do it across hospitals, but they can do it in a single hospital. But
they can do it within one organization, but they can't do it across the board.
No.
So in other words, you know, as physicians in one medical society in one Houston, can, you know, like in Houston or in one city, can't all get together and say, you know what, we need to be advocates for our patients as a profession. Physicians can't do that.
Right.
Only in one employed entity.
Right. So physicians can't sit in a room and compete against hospitals which have deep pockets, often endowments of tens of billions of dollars. So there's an economic barrier to fighting against this behemoth. There's also a statutory impediment to fight against it. The government has stacked the deck in favor of the hospitals or the ACOs. You talked about doctors as businesses just a few minutes ago. If a doctor wanted to try to compete and be a successful business, they're often prohibited from doing so because of a law called the Stark Law.
Correct.
Why don't you tell us what you know about the Stark Law?
Right. Well, Pete Stark is well known for a whole series of Stark laws. This is not one law. This is a series of laws and revisions that's built on each other, and that basically prohibits physicians from participating in the ownership of facilities and in referral to facilities.
Self-referral.
For example, for example, a physician can't own a radiology facility because of this construed image, why the law is there, that the doctor's going to order more tests if the doctor can benefit from those tests happening. So the Stark Law prevents the doctors from owning any part of any facility or any service that's involved in providing health care for his or her patients. If they receive Medicare dollars. However, it's in many specialties because, you know, once you hit 65 as a patient, you are automatically in Medicare. You're automatically in socialized medicine, government-controlled medicine. And many of us in certain specialties would really find it hard to practice if we couldn't take care of people 65 or older. Because, remember, these are the people who require more health care because they're older and they have more medical problems.
So what we're really talking about, there's a number of things that make it impossible or or difficult for physicians to compete on an equal playing field.
Right, but Hal, there's one more thing. If a physician owns a facility, for example, if you or I as a doctor owned an imaging facility, an X-ray facility, a radiology facility that maybe did a CAT scan or ultrasound, we would refer the patient to that. We would have a vested interest in that facility, not just being profitable, but being good, being able to provide a good, higher quality service. We would be responsible to make sure that for us to maintain that quality of reading, that so that when that X-ray is done, we want to make sure that that radiologist is doing good reading, not just superficial readings that might not help the patient. And so when a physician owns something, this has been shown multiple times that facilities that are owned by physicians, even partially owned by physicians, as limited partners, such as hospitals or surgery centers, they provide far better quality and a far better patient experience and better outcomes than facilities that are not owned by physicians. Because as doctors, we want to make sure that our patients get the best care and the best results. And when we can own and control an entity that provides that service, we have not only a vested interest in that facility succeeding, we want to make sure that that quality comes through and it improves our patients' lives and our patients' health. But when we're not allowed to own those facilities, we are not in control of that part of the patient's healthcare experience.
So the knock on this has been that physicians who own their own facility, who refer patients to these facilities, can game the system, and they can go ahead and order more tests than are necessary or unnecessary tests to line their pockets.
Correct, and that's always the reason for regulations, or very often the reason we need to regulate this as the government is to prevent somebody from making a profit in that entity, because that's bad and that's going to drive greed. Well, we see how Obamacare drives greed at the level of the large corporate entities such as hospitals and drug companies and insurance companies. What happens is that I could tell you for a fact, Hal, that my experience is that hospitals that have been partially owned by physicians or wholly owned by physicians, those types of hospitals are prohibited from expanding under Obamacare very specifically. Those hospitals provide a far better medical experience and far better results than hospitals that are not physician-owned, because the physician takes an active role. In other words, I'll give you a perfect example. For example, I'm involved in a hospital that about over 100 physicians help put together in our area on the east.
1 minute, Ori. We'll pick this up in the next segment. So say what you need to say.
Right, and so this hospital, when we have a problem in this hospital, we don't have a good. There's an emergency room physician that may not have given our patients a good experience. We actually have a control of being able to get to modify that physician behavior or get rid of that physician where we don't have that control in a facility we don't own.
Yes, that's a great point, that there are more incentives to do better in private enterprise than in a public enterprise, and that's going to be a great segue into the final segment about how to fix private practice and put it on an equal footing under Obamacare. This is the Doctor's Lounge.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded.
people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge, and we're talking about Obamacare's threat to private practice. Scott Gottlieb wrote a very important op-ed in Monday's Wall Street Journal that I think everybody should go online and read. It is a capsule of what the problems with Obamacare are vis-a-vis private practice health care, and Dr. Ori Hample is discussing this with me. And Ori, we've talked about a lot of things regarding Obamacare's threat to private practice, and we've talked about how, in the last segment, hospitals that are run by doctors, that are owned by doctors, have better performance than entities that are disconnected to the interests of doctors. Let me say that a different way. When interests are aligned, when the incentives are aligned, patients do better because everybody wants to do a better job, whether it means in terms of a doctor who is incentivized to go in and see an extra patient who is in the emergency room because they're going to get paid for it, or stay an extra hour at the end of the day to add on another patient who has an urgent problem. These are the kinds of things that happen when doctors actually have aligned interests versus working for an entity like an accountable care organization, punching a clock 9 to 5 and then checking out.
Right. And we see this all the time. I know you see this in your practice. I see it in my practice every day, that at 4:30, at 4:45, at 5, after we're officially closed, we get a call. We have a patient. The patient's in pain. I'm a urologist. The patient may have a kidney stone. The patient may have an active infection or whatever. And we're like, you know what, just send him right over. I'll take care of him. And I stay later. My staff stays later. I'm in a vested interest, so I want to help that patient. And you know what? I might make more money if I see an extra patient. But and so that greed factor, if you will, or you know, my trying to keep my doors open actually benefits the patient because it keeps him out of the emergency room. It gets that patient's problem taken care of.
And keeping them out of the emergency room, incidentally, is better care for them than I'm saying a negative, two negatives, but it's better care for them to see you than to go to an emergency room where they don't know the issues quite as well as you do.
Right, but also they can't fix the problem.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Well, sometimes they can, but sometimes they can only diagnose and then refer to the next physician to fix the problem.
That's assuming they get it right.
That's assuming they get it right. And as the specialist, I can actually attack the problem and help the patient directly and immediately. But the same applies for primary care. So if you have a patient that might have the flu or whatever, if it's, 4:30 in the afternoon, they call their primary care physician who is an employee of an ACO or a large hospital, that physician is punching the clock. There's no way that patient is ever going to see that doctor in the office. That patient's got to go to the urgent care center or the emergency room, and thereby driving up healthcare costs and decreasing the quality, because that physician-patient relationship has now been removed from that healthcare.
Right. And my mother is facing this with a Medicare HMO she has a doctor that she can actually sign up with, but that doctor isn't around at at 5 o'clock. So she's dealing with somebody else, somebody who she doesn't even know. And this is detrimental to patients across the entire spectrum of health care.
Right. And then when she goes to the hospital, her doctor doesn't take care of her. A hospitalist does.
That's correct.
So the person who knows her best and knows all of her medical problems on an ongoing basis, who can tell what her baseline status is, who can actually look at her and say, you know what? She usually looks better than this in the office. She must be sick. Well, that entire perspective is removed when the patient goes to the hospital.
Right. Okay, so here we are in entering 2015. We've got Obamacare that is just a disaster. It's driving healthcare off the rails. It's driving private practice out of business. As we said in the top of the hour, 35% of doctors are currently in private practice, and that number is falling. We've got payment models that are tilted in favor of hospitals and against private practice doctors. We've got a Republican House, a Republican Senate. What's the message? How do we stop the demise of private practice?
Well, the deal is that we have to empower the patient. See, when you remove any control and empowerment from the doctor, you also remove the empowerment from the patient.
So, what do you mean empower patients?
Well, the patient doesn't control the dollars,
okay.
So they don't control the decisions.
Okay.
They don't control the decisions of what happens to their health care. They don't control what service they get. They don't control what facility they go to.
Okay, so the third party payment system is a big problem, the perverse payment for medical services.
Correct. I mean, the you have to follow the dollars, and it's the old golden rule. Whoever holds the gold makes the rule.
So you're going to go to Washington. You're going to talk to the people in Congress. What are you going to tell them?
Well, I think that Washington, in this case, is the problem. It's not the solution. To quote Ronald Reagan, the problem is that the Washington started all this, and it's, you know, I hate to say this, but under Ronald Reagan, that's where the third-party payer system actually originated at the level of the government, and then private practice, and then insurance companies learned very quickly how to do it. The problem is Washington.
Okay, so
this is one of those situations where really this is something where the patients really have to get together. This is where we have to create an economy, a medical economy that's outside of Obamacare.
Okay, so
outside.
So right now we have Obamacare, and it is the law of the land, and it's heading in the wrong direction. And we have a Republican Congress coming in. There have been at least five Republican plans, three from the House, two from the Senate, that have been alternatives to Obamacare. People are saying repeal and replace. And the media that underreports this kind of stuff have said, replace with what? The Republicans have come out with nothing. And we know that that's an out-and-out lie. They have come out with very good plans. And Tom Price, who will be my guest in an upcoming show, has written one of the bills, the Empowering Patient First Act, and it's been written for the 111th, 112th, 113th Congress. He's rewriting it for the 114th Congress. What does he have to include in there, Ori, to make things right?
Well, it has to do with patient empowerment. It has to do with that the dollars need to be controlled by the patient. Be it however it is, whether it's health savings accounts and catastrophic health plan to boot, or whether it's just allowing the deregulation so that physicians can survive in practice without all these regulations. I really think the message is not repeal and replace. I think the message is repeal and repeal and repeal and repeal. You repeal Obamacare, then you repeal the high tech, the provision that does electronic medical records, then you need to repeal EMTALA, and this is a law that enslaves physicians to emergency rooms and hospitals. And then you have to, just repeal one thing after the next.
Well, I think that, I've talked about this before and I've written about this. I think that we're heading to a two-tier healthcare system. We're there already. And so what we need to have is an alternative to Obamacare. There are going to be people who want their government to take care of them, and Obamacare is just perfect for them. Let them have that. But there are millions and millions of Americans who don't want any part of that, and they want an alternative. And that's what we need to make sure our politicians allow to exist, to happen. And we need that, to push that, so that when they rewrite the bills, this is something that can thrive and be supported. And at the end of the day, if people see a thriving healthcare economy that is outside of Obamacare, I think that's going to win at the end.
No, I agree. But the people that will really win are the patients.
Right.
The patients win.
That's what I'm
when
saying.
They have a choice. The patients win when they have competition.
Right.
The patients win because then there's somebody with a vested interest to making sure that real quality happens. And real quality is that the patient does well and the patient's happy with their doctor and with their hospital and with their facility.
Right.
And that's when everybody wins.
Okay.
And that's really where we need to go. And you're right. We need to make sure that there's a regulatory environment there that's able to allow the physicians to practice in such an environment. And it gives the patients the choice to be able to go to those doctors. So it has to empower the physicians to take care of the patients, and it has to empower the patients to actually seek the care of those physicians that they want.
I love it. Well, patient choice in an environment of free enterprise, open things up, seems to be the formula for success in everything else outside of medicine, and I think it would be a success in medicine as well. Ori, I want to thank you for taking the time and discussing this very important issue with me today.
You're welcome, Hal. I always enjoy talking to you, and I think this is a very important discussion of the most personal of topics to individual patients and to individual Americans, and that's their health.
I couldn't agree more. We'll have you on again at some point in the future. Thanks for joining us. I wanted to thank everybody who has been tuning in to the Doctor's Lounge and supporting our show. This will be my last show of this year. We'll be on a holiday schedule. Next week, Dr. Michael Karuchik will bring you the last show of 2014. We've had a very successful year. We started in June, and I think that we've had an excellent run thus far. We're looking forward to a very productive, enlightened 2015 with a lot of good shows coming your way that we have in store for you. And I want to wish everyone a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.